The fifth chapter of Matthew, beginning with verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out, and to be trodden under the foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven.
We considered this morning a particular challenge as the disciples were sent forth with the message of the gospel of the coming of the kingdom of heaven in Matthew chapter 10, and looked at how there are certain lessons we might learn there for our own selves to as we go forth with the gospel into the world. But I also want to consider tonight the challenge as we go into a world that does not encourage our faith. We go forth into the world, and it is rare for those around us to encourage us, to really support us in doing that which is right. If one stops and thinks about it, we come together, we assemble as a congregation of the Lord's people in a typical week, maybe only 4 hours out of the week. That's 4 hours out of 168 hours out of the week. When we come together, this is oftentimes a supporting place, an encouraging place. And people want to see us succeed. They want to see us do well as Christians. We encourage one another. Fortunately, many of you are able to go home into homes that have that same kind of encouragement. We want to support. We want to encourage. We want to see each other do well in life, especially from a spiritual standpoint. We want to have the same goal, the same aim that our mind is set on heaven and reaching that eternal goal. And so we encourage one another in that. Sadly, there are people that will go and not even within their homes and within that family, is there any encouragement? That's sad enough. In many instances, there are times when their faith is going to be discouraged, even by them, those of their own household. But then certainly as we go maybe to our workplace, as we go to our schools, as we go about our daily lives, as we go into our neighborhoods, there may be few that really encourage us in doing that which is right, and we may actually find that there are those who have no interest in us doing that which is right, would actually try to drag us down into the world, and it presents a challenge for us. How do we go forth, even as the scripture reading tonight in Matthew 5 and verse 16, how do I go forth as lights in a world? How do I go forth and be an example when maybe much of the world around me is, as we'll describe, a godless place? People not interested in God and people not interested in doing what's right. I want to take some encouragement. If you want to turn to the Old Testament book of Daniel, and particularly Daniel chapter 1, as we begin tonight, we look at four Hebrew youths: Daniel, Mishael, Azariah, and Hananiah. Maybe better known as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Four Hebrew youths that were taken into a godless place, to a people that were carried away into a heathen nation, where it was not only not encouraged they continue in their faith. In fact, there were many influences that discouraged their faith. What lessons can we learn from them, and what encouragement can we gain from them? I tell you, from the very beginning, chapter 1 presents the introduction, if you will, to the lives of these men. It's likely we pick up their stories as teenagers. Some have suggested maybe around the age of 16 or so. They are taken from their home. They're taken from the land that they have known, that they have lived in. They're taken from their families. and they're taken into a strange and a foreign land, we begin to look at the challenges these four men faced, and yet they are an example to all of us. In Daniel chapter 1, we begin to read of the carrying away. God has sent His messengers, the prophets, time and again to warn Judah to turn from her ways, and she has refused. She has not learned from the lesson of her northern sister Israel, who has already been carried into captivity. And so her own time has now come. Daniel picks up in about 606 B.C. as Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians are now coming against Jerusalem. In 606 B.C., again in 597 B.C., and finally in 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar is going to come against Jerusalem. In each instance, he carries certain people away. And finally, in 586 B.C., not only does he carry the bulk of the people away, he destroys the city. But what we find here is Nebuchadnezzar begins with the best. In Daniel chapter 1, in verse 4, it says of those that Nebuchadnezzar was looking for, he said, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and in whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And so here, these are some of Judah's finest people. Some of the seed royal, some of those that have the most ability and some of the most talented. That's who is carried away very first. In 606 B.C., there were those of the seed royal and those that were very skilled that were first going to be those that would be carried away into captivity. And these four youths, we find, are going to be that type of people. But even more impressive than that, not only were they just some of the best in terms of a worldly standard there, we're going to find four U's in which stand out in the spiritual nature of Jerusalem. Think about it. What is the city like at the time? This is a city that has turned itself against God, a city that has refused His warnings time and again, a city against whom now God has said it's going to be destroyed and my captives are coming against it. There are not many people that have the dedication we're going to see in the lives of these four Hebrews. Not many of them are standing up and say, we're going to do that which is right in the sight of God. And yet here are these four men that would. What were the particular challenges? Well, let me suggest to you first, there's an environmental challenge that they faced. In chapter 1 there, verse 3 and 4, we'll read verse 3 now. He says, and the king spoke unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, and he said that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. You drop down there for verse 4. They're going to bring them, those that are these fine young men, and they're bringing them to Babylon. They're going to be raised up here in the king's palace. They're going to be those that can be servants now in the king's palace. And begin to understand what's happening. Here are young men. Again, maybe we're talking somewhere between 14 and 18 years of age. We live in a society which, for the most part, most of our children won't move out until maybe about 18. And depending on how you consider it, that might be lucky. They might stick around a few years longer. But here are four men that are young by any standard. And they're taken away from everything they know. Again, we mentioned their family, the land that they've known, the customs they're used to, all of the friends that they know. These things are stripped away from them and they're torn away into a foreign country in which they know nothing. Never visited this place. I don't know anybody here. I don't have the support and encouragement that my family might have given me, that friends might have given me or others that were around me might have given me. All of those things are gone. Now here's a new language. There are new customs. Everything about this place is strange to me. And particularly when we consider this is a heathen nation. At least to some degree, these young men had grown up in a land that at least nominally honored God. And these men especially seem to have had a greater value placed within them, gained somehow here, than most of those that had grown up around them. They had a desire to do what was right in the eyes of God, but now they're in a land that is worshiping idols. That's a great change in their life. And all of those things change all around them. That is going in itself present a challenge to them. How do I continue being faithful in this godless world? How do I continue being faithful when my faith is not encouraged? In fact, we'll see in just a moment that faith is being stripped away from them in every way that the Babylonians can do. Because consider not only the environmental change, consider their identity change. In verse 6 and 7, "Now among those were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, and unto Hananiah of Shadrach, and unto Mishael of Meshach, and unto Azariah Abednego." Now consider for just a moment. They're given names that they had grown up with. Daniel was known, or his name means, "God is my judge." And his name is changed to Belteshazzar, Bel's prince, or Bel's protector. Again, all of these names that they're changed into have stripped away any reference to the God they know, and they're given references to the heathen idols that the Babylonians were serving. Also, you consider Hananiah, "God is gracious." Unto him is given the name Shadrach, or maybe a command of Aku, again, one of the Babylonian gods. Mishael, "Who is what God is given the name Meshach, who is like Aku. Azariah, "God has helped," and he is given the name Abednego, the servant of Nego. So now my identity, everything about me, they're trying to change. I'm in a strange environment. They've changed my name. They're trying to strip away here the references to the God that I know and the God that I serve, and they want me to be like them. Again, a challenge they're going to face, but then also a spiritual challenge. They begin to recognize as they're taken into this place, they want me to do the things they do. They want me to do the things that are just common to them, but I can't participate in all of their activities. Verse 5, it says, "The king appointed unto them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king." But notice the challenge there in verse 8. "Daniel purposed in his heart he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Daniel recognized in these items they were going to be placing before him, "I can't partake of those things. It's not right. I will not defile myself." Again, I'm away from my family. I'm away from those that know me. Who's going to know? Who's going to look down on me? Can I just say, "Well, I'm forced to eat this"? Can I just say, I didn't really have any sort of choice? Shouldn't I just do as the Babylonians do? Shouldn't I just go along with whatever society I happen to be in? And yet that's not the attitude of these youths. Daniel specifically is pointed out, but we find Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego all were doing the same thing. They didn't want to defile themselves with the things that were set before them. I'm going to suggest to you, when we go out in the world, we face many of these same challenges. We have environmental changes. You leave this supporting place, the congregation as we assemble together. Hopefully, again, your home is a supporting place for the faith of each individual. And it's encouraged and supported and built upon one of another. But what happens when I leave that place? What happens when that encouragement isn't maybe necessarily right there? What happens when I surround myself now with others that are my coworkers or my friends or my neighbors in some other instance that I find myself in? My environment's changed. Does that mean I'm going to change? My environment's changed, and there may be people around me that will scoff at me or laugh or try to destroy the faith that I have in God and in His Word and in that which is right. What am I going to do under those conditions? There's an identity challenge. We go forth into the world. The world says, why not be like us? Don't worry about being godly. Didn't you do that on Sunday? It's now Monday. It's now Tuesday. It's now Friday night. It's Saturday night. Worry about being spiritual later. Worry about being a Christian on another day. Right now, you're in the world. Live it up. And again, the world would strip away any public affirmation of our faith. Again, it's not hard to look around in the world about us. And we don't live in a nation any longer that encourages a Christian faith. We live in a nation that, to the greatest extent possible, is trying to remove God from every facet of public life. I don't want to see that cross out on the hill. That's going to offend me. Don't you know that? And so as Christians, we're supposed to just remove any reference to our belief and our faith in God. The world would like it to be so. And so you're an environmental challenge. You have the identity challenge that maybe it's okay if y'all just gather over there on a particular day of the week and worship your God, but don't bring any of that out here. Strip that away. And then you also have, of course, the spiritual challenge. You're going to face temptations all around. Why won't you come and participate with us in these things? These things are normal. These things are good. These things are right. When we know that, of course, in the life of the Christian, it's not. All of those are going to be challenges, just as these four Hebrew youths faced. And it shouldn't be much of a surprise. Jesus Himself prayed concerning His disciples that they were in the world, but not of the world. John 17, verse 14 through 16. He prayed for their safety, for their protection. He said, they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. We need to recognize that even still today, no matter what the world around us says, I may live in this place, but I'm not of this place. I don't have to be like it. Daniel and his friends here were taken to Babylon. They didn't have much choice in that matter. But they didn't have to be like that place. They didn't have to follow after the same standards. They didn't have to follow after the same morals and religious elements. They could stand and say, I'm still going to do that which is right. Just like we studied this morning in Matthew chapter 10, as Jesus encouraged His disciples, He said, if they persecuted Me, they'll persecute you as well. But fear not man. Fear not them which are able to kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul. But rather, fear Him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Matthew 10 and verse 28. Determine, I am going to put God first in my life. I am going to stand up for that which is right, even as did these youths. Can we learn from them that, yes, they faced challenges, but they were up for those challenges? I want to go on now and consider how they faced some of these challenges. When we continue reading In chapter 1, we learn about their commitments. They had faced challenges, and yet there was a determination of their heart. If you read through this chapter in particular, you find four youths that had an amazing conviction. A conviction that said, I'm going to do right. Notice first off here, there is their heart. We've already read there in verse 8, it says that Daniel had purposed in his heart. He had determined. He had set himself. He had decided. It seems here Daniel had already determined, even as he maybe was going to the place, maybe before he was taken away. It doesn't matter what happens to me in life. It doesn't matter where I go. I'm still going to honor and serve God. How easy it would have been to go into this strange place, away from family, away from friends, away from those he knew, and just said, well, I'm I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to go along. Instead, here's a young man that said, no, I am determined. I am set in heart that I'm going to do that which is right in the sight of my God. And that can be oftentimes one of the hardest things to do. You see, it's easy for us to say, I'm going to do that which is right when I'm in this nurturing environment. But we're looking at now of people that have gone into a godless world. Of people where this is not encouraged, it is strongly, forcibly discouraged. And yet still, he was set, I am determined that I'm going to do that which is right. Didn't matter. If God was, or if no one else knew, Daniel knew God is still with me. God is still watching over. God knows that which I am going through. He knows the decisions that I'm making. And yet also, as you look at their heart, their determination, consider their humility. As you read there in verse 8 through 12, you don't find a people that bow up their backs and say, I will not listen to you. Here are people that humbly go before those that have been placed over them. I can't eat that which has been set before me. But here's the thing. You go and you feed me this water and these vegetables. Here's what I can do. Would you please allow me to do that which is right in my own sight, my own conscience, because I want to please God. Here are people that are polite, they are humble in their demands that they are making of other people. They go before these other rulers that are placed over them to ask, not in an offensive manner, but to ask, to plead with them, can I do that which is right? It doesn't have to be a haughty, puffed up an approach to someone else. And we don't have to be that way in the world either. We're not going out as a condescending people saying, I'm so much better and higher and holier than thou. We go forth and say, I'm going to serve my God in the way that's right. And so these youths set before their overseers here an alternative. Here's what we can do. And even says, give us a test. Let us do this for 10 days. Let us eat that which we know is right. And then you can look back and you can see, are we not well improved for that? But then also their honesty. Again, about verse 13 through 16 there, you begin to see a people that are not asking this just to be contrary, not just to be stubborn. They're doing it because they want to do that which is right. I'm not trying to be deceptive. I'm not trying to be argumentative. But I am trying to do that which is right. And indeed, after that period of testing, they were found to be far better and not worse. There is an encouragement there in the heart that they possess, in their determination to do that which is right in the sight of God and to go about it in a rather peaceably way. But you know, that wasn't the only situation in which they would find themselves. Two other particular situations that we're quite familiar with. You could go over to chapter 3, and here is the instance where Nebuchadnezzar has set up this great image, and he says, anytime you hear the sound of the various instruments that are to be playing, everybody within the kingdom is to fall down before it and worship. Again, there's your spiritual challenge. Everybody else is doing it. Am I going to stand out? Am I going to decide to do that which is right? Am I going to defy the king under which I rule in order to do that which is right, knowing that it might cost me my life? And yet when the music played, there were the three youths, and they refused to bow their knee. They refused to worship that which they knew was not right. I said one time, you know, that sure would have been a convenient time. I said, oh, look at my shoelace. It sure needs to be tied. Here were three men that said, no, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to do what's right. Even if it does bring me in harm's way of my very life. But notice as you're reading there, they're brought before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he says, I'm going to give you another chance. What if once again I have that music played, will you bow down? And here they are before the very king. King that does, in one sense, have their life in his hands. He can order their death, and in fact, he's ready to. But notice their response. In verse 16, they answered and said unto the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it so be, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, we will not serve thy gods, nor worship thy golden image which thou hast set up. Now, I still see within them an attitude of respect, inasmuch as possible that they could have. They still are nice enough. We're not going to do it. I'm not doing that in defiance of you. I'm not doing it just to make a statement or to be a rebel. I'm doing it because I know it's not right. I will not worship the image that you have set up. They were going to trust in God. Indeed, they had the confidence that God would be able to save them even out of the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. And yet, there is also expressed there, even if he doesn't, we're still going to do that which is right in the sight of God. And so Nebuchadnezzar, of course, there has that fiery furnace heated hotter than it was ever known to be heated. Cast them in, and Nebuchadnezzar is in for the shock of his life as he now sees four men walking around in that furnace, and he's able to call them out. And there is not a hair of their body that sins, not even the smell of smoke that is on their clothes. Because they've stood, again, for what is right. There was a determination of heart. Consider Daniel as well. Now, as he is a much older man, you've passed out of the Babylonian reign, and now you're in the Medo-Persian reign. And there is a decree that is signed that no one can make a petition of any god other than the king for a period of some days. And yet, even as Daniel knows that decree has been signed, he goes into his room, he opens his window, and he begins to pray to God. Now again, not defiance. He's not just trying to be a rebel, but he's going to do what which is right. Had Daniel never done this before, we might have a problem here. But it tells us Daniel was doing this just as he had always done. Daniel chapter 6, verse 4. And five. Daniel chapter 6. I may have gotten the wrong verse there. But verse 10. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. When Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his own house, his windows being opened in his chamber towards Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. You see, it didn't matter what others wanted him to do. Daniel was going to continue doing that which is right. And so we get to see four men here that are totally committed to God. I think part of the thing we cannot afford to miss goes back there to Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8. That Daniel had determined in his heart. He had decided before these events ever came up what he was going to do. It's often been said, I can't wait for a particular situation to arise, then decide what am I going to do. I can't wait till I'm face to face with a certain temptation and say, well, I'll just decide then what it is I need to do. We need to know that which is pleasing to God by continuing in our study of His Word. We need to have that determination. As much as possible, I'm going to continue with Him. Now, I know we're going to fall into sin. We're going to make mistakes as we go through life. But it shouldn't be a haphazard approach that says, I'm just not going to worry about it. Would we be like these men that says, I know as I go forth into the world, I'm going to do that which I know to be right. I'm going to put forth my effort. I'm going to determine even within myself that I'm going to do what is right. And that's what we see in these men. Peter had encouraged us, be sober, be vigilant, watchful. Not growing lazy or slothful or unwatchful, Because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9. Are we, like Jesus exhorted us to be, that we would take, that he said unto those, if you will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Be willing to deny yourself, to die even to yourself, to take up that instrument of shame and reproach, that I would continue following after him and putting him first again. How am I going to shine as lights in a godless world? It's going to take that same kind of determination. I'm going to choose and determine and decide before in my heart that I'm going to do that which is right. But finally, I want you to consider the influence they made. Maybe from time to time, part of why we struggle is we ask ourselves, is what I'm doing really of any benefit to anybody else? You know, Jesus said, shine as lights in the world, but is anybody looking? When you look at these men, you begin to understand there is a great influence that they had. I'm going to suggest to you, first off, that there was a great influence that they had even upon one another. Not particularly recorded for us, but here is Daniel that's speaking up in chapter 1 and verse 8. Says, I've determined in my heart that I will not defile myself. It may be. That encouragement is what Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah also needed in order to make the same determination. It could well have been that their solidarity together encouraged them to continue in what was right. I've often wondered about the account of Numbers chapter 13 and 14 and the spies come back. It seems to be that Caleb is the one that speaks up first, and he's all, we can go and do this. Later, Joshua will join in with him and agree, yes, this is what we can do, not of our own might, but because God is with us. I wonder in the same instance, if Caleb wasn't the encouraging force that Joshua also needed. But I think we can see that just in practical application. It's a lot easier for me to stand up and do that which is right oftentimes if I'm not standing alone. If there's someone that will stand next to me for the same thing. Here were four men that were willing to stand together and do that which was right, even if they were the only four who did so. I don't know anything else about the others that were taken into captivity. Not on this occasion and not much more of the other captives. But here, at least in their own example, they were going to do that which is right. But I would suggest to you also, there was a great encouragement there, even to those that were around them. In their willingness to stand up, not only did they encourage maybe one another, but possibly they caused others to think as well. Would there be other captives who would now maybe have just gone along with whatever was being done? That maybe they themselves would think about what they were doing. Maybe it's even going to be someone of Babylon that's going to see the example that these men were setting and determined to follow in the same steps. In fact, I know that Daniel had an influence upon others. I made a reference earlier to Daniel chapter 6, and here one of the things that stands out is Daniel's character. It's been suggested that Daniel is probably at least a man of 85 years of age by the time we come to chapter 6. It's many decades further into the future. He's an older man, and yet he's still standing and being faithful unto God, even in the face of the lion's den here. Notice there in verse 4 and 5 what the people knew about him. The presidents and the princes sought occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find, they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. And then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Here's a man that's upright. Here's a man that when other people looked at him, they saw the example of one that was faithful. Here are his enemies that are searching. I can't imagine being a presidential candidate or a candidate for any office. Those men have to know that all of their backgrounds are going to be dug up and displayed on all sorts of public TV. And it is amazing sometimes what the if it's want to be found, what can be found and displayed for everyone to see. Yet here are Daniel's enemies, and they're searching, and they're looking, and they're watching. I would imagine they are scrutinizing his every move, and they said, here is Daniel, and we can't catch him in anything. This is an upright man. But we know what we can catch him in. He will not go against that which you know is right. He will not go against his God. And so if we can make it illegal for him to serve his God, we know then we have him. Because he will continue doing that which is right. And so that's why they have that command that they are not supposed to pray to anyone other than the king. And so there was an example. Even the men that were around Daniel could see he's an upright man. But I'd suggest to you also, here was one that affected the lives of others. See, he didn't just have an example. There is a great influence that they were able to have. Daniel especially is going to be seen throughout the time of Nebuchadnezzar and his son, and even on down to the grandson. News of Daniel is still going to be there. Daniel's still going to be standing before the kings and the rulers of the land as the Medo-Persians begin to reign. And had a significant impact on all of these under whom he had the opportunity to serve. Consider here just for a moment even the end of this chapter. As they are now ready to come before the king, beginning in verse 19 it says, the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. In all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So he has now opportunity to reign under all of these kings, and particularly his influence is going to be seen on Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel chapter 2, verse 47. The king answered and said unto Daniel, said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. When you come now to Daniel chapter 3 and the three youths have been called out of the fiery furnace, the king will make this decree in verse 29 and 30. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. And the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Again, chapter 4, verse 37. The influence that Daniel would have. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, those that walk in pride he is able to abase. And King Darius there in chapter 6, after he calls Daniel out of the lion's den, verse 25 and following. King Darius arose unto all people, wrote unto all people, nations and languages that dwell in all of the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven from the earth. Who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? And so Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And my point is, as you look at these various accounts, where would Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have been had they not stood up and done that which was right? I don't know where they would have been. But I do know this. They would not have had the influence and the example that was set before godly men, before wicked men. Here were those that were seeking opportunity against Daniel, and they can't accuse him of anything. Here is the king, time and again, that gets to see the God that Daniel worships and serves. He is God. And there is none like unto him. What influence, what example they were able to have. Now, God had left his prophets, even now as they're going into captivity. Jeremiah's back with the people of Jerusalem, and they're going down into Egypt, and with the captives of that area. Ezekiel is pictured among the captives that are again in the land of Babylon, and he's prophesying to them. But here is Daniel especially, that's in kings' houses. He has the opportunity to be an influence, to be an example to those that were ruling even in this government. He had a powerful influence on them. So much so, some believe Nebuchadnezzar even began to be a worshiper of the God of heaven. He certainly had the opportunity to know much more about God through the life and through the teaching, through the interaction with Daniel that he had. And we can ask ourselves, I may not have that same influence. I may never stand before kings and governors and presidents. But what influence am I having on those that I come in contact with just day by day? Are they going to have been better off having known me? Are they going to be better off having seen the life that I live? That ought to be an encouragement for us. Yes, I'm going forth into a godless world, but I'm going to live the example that I know I should, first and foremost for my own self because I know it's right. But secondly, as an encouragement, there are going to be others all around me that now have the opportunity to know God and what it is to live a godly life. Paul writes unto the Christians at Corinth. He says, "Ye are our epistle written in our hearts, known and read of all men," 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 2. There's an understanding there. As you go forth into the world, people are reading you like a book. They're seeing you. They're seeing what you're doing. They're seeing the change that's been brought about in your life. They're seeing how you're now living as a Christian. And Paul recognizes that, yes, that's a reflection on us. We've come and we preach the gospel unto you, and people now see that change in your life because they're looking at you and they're looking at your example. Paul will write unto Timothy, he said, "Be thou an example," 1 Timothy chapter 4. In verse 12, he writes unto the Christians at Philippi, and he says, "That you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and a perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life." You go forth into a crooked and a perverse nation. That sounds like a lot like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego going forth into a heathen nation. You're going into a godless world, but you live a godly example. You allow others to see the good life that you're living, that they might also desire to live the same life. If nothing else, they're going to see that a Christian was living among them. They're going to see one that is honoring and one that is serving God. And then you can speak of a glorious end as you think about these four Hebrew youths. Here they are standing before King Nebuchadnezzar. They're the ones that are picked. Here they are standing before kings and are going to be rulers in the land of Babylon. And again, we can trace all of that back to their faithfulness to God. We can trace all of it back to their unwillingness to bend, to compromise with that which they knew was right. Their unwillingness to bow before anyone other than the God of heaven. And so they had a wonderful end when we consider their influence and even of our own selves. I may never know, may never be able to appreciate what influence I have. Same is certainly true for you as well. You have an influence on others that are going to have an influence on others that will influence others. It's impossible for anyone to know what the end of that example is going to be. But here's what I can be sure of, that if that is a godly example that's going to improve the lives of others, that is a wonderful example that's been shown forth in the world. Not only that, we can speak of the God or the glorious end of one that is faithful throughout his life, even unto death, that's now going to enjoy an eternal home with God in heaven. We need to strive to be a godly people. Strive to be a people that are going to honor, worship, and serve God, and recognize we go forth into a godless world. It's not always true, but it seems even more and more so that is true of our nation and our society. When we leave this place of encouragement, when we leave maybe our homes, that encouragement we have is going to dissipate. There won't be much encouragement for us to live godly lives, and yet we need the determination, I'm going to continue doing that which is right, regardless of the challenges that we face, that I might have an example on others, that I might have that same glorious end of being able to influence others, but look back and also be able, like Paul, to say, I lived the faithful life. I did that which is right. I did that which was good. And I now look forward to that eternal life with God in heaven. I hope that's the same encouragement that we can have even tonight to go forth from this place saying, I know that's the life I'm striving to live. Yes, from time to time, I'm going to have to reevaluate myself and say, that's not what I'm doing right now. And I'm going to find areas in my life I may be able to work on. And I can go forth as a greater example, as a more steadfast in my resolve to serve God in any situation and in all things. But above all, like them, to say, I'm going to do that which is right. I will purpose in my heart not to defile myself, but rather to go forth into the world as an example of a faithful Christian. Will we make that determination even tonight? Maybe one ready to become a New Testament Christian, to be baptized into Christ. Maybe one needing the prayers of the brothers and sisters in Christ as we ask forgiveness of God and those we may have wronged, and strive now to live that life that is right. And certainly for all of us to go forth and say, I can learn from the example of these four Hebrew youths, and I want to implement that in my own life. If you're subject to that invitation, wouldn't you let it be known, even right now, as together we stand, as we sing.